Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
After telling us that they didn't monitor phone calls and proceeded to leave the station on foot about 7:30 in the morning. So she walked, they have her on cameras walking, and even the police sergeant said, this was Saturday the 6th when we were searching for her, said that she was kind of just wandering around the parking lot and they had that on video, and then later revealed that they could see her on video on the street outside the police station, and which is Pleasant Valley Road, until about 8:30, and then she's no longer on film. There's a lady that lives in a house not too far from the police station who did saw Marina walking and called the police to report her, and nothing was done. They didn't make contact with her, and that's literally the last time anybody saw her.
At approximately 7:30 a.m. on May 28th, 2020, 39-year-old social worker Marina Bischoff walked out of the Shoal Creek Patrol Division of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department after being released from her arrest the night before. Marina walked out of the police station with no cell phone, no one to pick her up, no money or identification, and only the clothes she had been arrested in. After walking out of the doors of the police station, Marina has not been seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 241 of The Vanished, Marina Bischoff's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Marina Bischoff was a social worker at a children's hospital in her newly adopted hometown of Kansas City, Missouri, where she had lived since 2017 after relocating from Cincinnati, Ohio, the town where she grew up. Born in Brazil, Marina and her family had come to the United States when she was just 10 years old. We spoke to Marina's brother, Victor, and he told us about their life in their new country.
Marina came to the U.S. when she was 10. I was 14. That process for me was pretty smooth. Didn't have any challenges, but my sister felt a little bit more. She had a lot of connections, a lot of her friends and people that she cared about down in Brazil. Obviously, my grandparents, but she was able to transition well. Overall, it was a good experience for us. Challenging, right? Obviously, learning language, learning the new culture, getting adapted to a new location. But outside of that, it was a good experience for us. My dad served in the National Guards during the Vietnam. So basically, my dad moved to Brazil after Vietnam, married my mom. So his goal was always to come back to the U.S. So my dad was actually born in Brazil, but he moved to the U.S. at a very young age. He was five years old when he moved to the U.S., but he grew up here. So we weren't national citizens, but we were able to get our paperwork because of his service to the military.
Victor told us that from a very young age, Marina was always looking out for the well-being of her friends and family. She showed true concern for those around her, which never changed as she grew up and translated well to her career as a social worker. We also spoke with one of Marina's friends from school, Sarah, and she told us about how she met Marina and how their friendship started.
So I was a new student in Cincinnati in my sophomore year in high school at Sycamore High School. And I came into study hall the first day and we were sat alphabetically and I was sat next to Marina and we immediately started talking and she was so kind and welcoming to me as a new student. And she had been a new student a year or two previously, having moved a little bit around the U.S. and then ultimately having moved from Brazil. So she was just kind of understood the challenges and was really kind and welcoming. And we just quickly became friends from there and just hung out all the time in high school. And when her family eventually, or her parents eventually moved back to Brazil, she would, because my family was based in Cincinnati, and I know another good friend of ours, Anne's family was there. She would spend holidays like, you know, Easter, Thanksgiving with one of our families. And she went on vacation with my family to Virginia Beach and to Kentucky and to different places. So she just kind of became part of the family. And that was probably maybe 24 years ago that we met, and we've just remained friends since then. I've since moved out across the country to California, and she has come to visit me several times, and she's just like a member of the family. She's so thoughtful. She's roomed with my sister twice, been roommates with her twice in Cincinnati. She's the most thoughtful, kind, caring person ever, which I mean, I guess it makes sense. She went into something as giving as social work. That's just always on her mind. She was that friend that when she would come over to my house in high school, she could somehow get along with me, my little sister, and my parents equally as well, which is not something most teenagers can do. She just connects with people, but not in a extroverted, gregarious, charismatic way. She connects on just a very quiet, gentle way. And that kind of always drew me to her, and my family to her, just was just how much she could just connect, and the attention never needed to be on her, but she always listened, always talked, always asked really thoughtful questions, was really well educated on kind of what was going on in the world and liked to talk about those things with my parents and I, but also could just talk about kind of your daily struggles or what was going on in her life, and was just very, very easy to connect with. She's an artist. She loves to paint. She would make these beautiful, like in particular, the ones that stuck out to me where she loved to paint flowers and like kind of use pastel colors with it. I can remember going to some of her art shows that she would put on in Cincinnati, and my mom bought one of her, I think they were of pansy work on tiles, and my mom has it in her sewing room right now and looks at it all the time. And she's made me things. So she's very introverted, kind, gentle, thoughtful, and artistic.
After completing her undergraduate and graduate work in Cincinnati, Marina spent some time working at a children's hospital there before she decided to take a new job opportunity in Kansas City, Missouri. When we talked to Rachel, one of Marina's coworkers at her job, she told us how much she enjoyed working with Marina.
So Marina and I have worked together. My relationship with Marina is 99% like coworker. And just within the nature of how we work together, we work at a pediatric urgent care, which just means high stress, pretty high volume. And, you know, she works on a lot of, she's like a big resource for a lot of our patients. So she and I met, I'm transferred up to that urgent care in December of 2018. So it's been, you know, about a year and a half. And she is just as a person, really, really kind of quiet and naive to almost a fault, really kind, conservative, and just really anxious at baseline. Had a lot of just like, she was super health conscious, like environmentally friendly, interested in everything organic, and just kind of really honestly like creative and a really good-hearted, just kind person. She's very much part of our work family, and we always look out for her. We're in Kansas City, so the weather is always crazy. So she was really anxious about driving and driving on ice, hated driving on the highways. So she would ask us how to get to like Trader Joe's without taking the highway. Well, the Trader Joe's is like 20 miles from where her apartment is. So it'd be like, Marina, you can't do that. Like, you have to cross a river. Like, just the anxiety sometimes almost got in the way of just like rational thought.
Rachel shared with us that Marina was a naturally anxious person, with her avoidance of highways and other strange habits. And as the coronavirus crisis descended upon the United States in March of 2020, Marina started to become very anxious about working in a healthcare environment and feared contracting the virus. Here's Rachel with more.
It was mid-March. It was like March 12th was kind of the last normal day that we all had at our clinic. And it was, we knew coronavirus was in the United States. We knew it was going to probably affect our practice. We had just come off a really crazy flu season. And I think initially we all were like, oh my gosh, do we have another flu season? And I was like, it's so exhausting. It's what we do, but it's just exhausting. And you look forward to what we call the summer slump, where we just have fewer patients and it's bumps and bruises and broken bones and just like really simple stuff. Marina was instantly terrified of getting coronavirus. She would say things like, you know, if I get coronavirus, I'm going to die. Rachel, I know I'm going to die if I get this. And I was just like, Marina, and these were multiple conversations. You know, we have masks, like we have the things we need to protect ourselves. And she became really, really concerned if we needed her on a patient, you know, do I need to wear a mask? And it was just like, no, they're just throwing up. You don't need a mask for that. And she was always very anxious about getting what the patients had if it was something that was contagious. But we kind of started to see her hang out more in her office. And like she socialized a lot less. And over the course of kind of the March and April, so the number of daily patients we saw, I mean, it bottomed out. There's a lot of like just kind of awkward silence and standing around, and it created this job insecurity. And people from our organization, we all were terrified for that our jobs are at risk, and they were. And Marina, because she was just like the social worker for our little satellite location, was being talked to by her superiors about having to go to like cover different clinics or different locations, which then meant that she would have to drive on the highway and she would have to do something that she wasn't familiar with. And I think like part of what she did to control her anxiety was live in a bubble, going to the same grocery stores, going on the same paths. She really was not familiar with Kansas City and how to get around it. Didn't really ever talk about being connected with anybody outside of work. The idea of her having to go, for instance, down to our main hospital and work in the emergency room was just terrible. I mean, she was like in tears, so afraid that she would lose her job and lose her income and lose just the security. And frankly, we were all too, and we were being redeployed to different shifts. So we started seeing each other less. We started working with each other less. And kind of just when you did get to go work at our clinic, like it was pretty exciting to see people because we got spread out and divided. Marina made a song, and I only laugh because I got trapped 3 times at the nurse's station. Her singing, she wrote a song to the tune of I Will Survive about the coronavirus, and it honestly like makes me want to cry because I can just hear her still singing like I Will Survive. And I think it was her greatest attempt at just emotionally dealing with just all of it. And she was really, really like so proud of one writing the song, and she would laugh while she was singing it. And we were just like, oh my God, this is the worst thing we've ever heard. But then it just is like, it's endearing because it's her. And I joke even still with my coworkers, I'm like, I would do anything to hear her sing that damn song one more time.
While Marina and Rachel were fairly safe and insulated at their job, because they didn't have direct contact with patients who potentially were infected with COVID-19. Marina's anxiety continued to get worse and worse. Here's Rachel again.
I mean, and I have anxiety too. My anxiety has been like 20 out of 10 since March. I think the first week, we've been blessed that we've had an organization that has been able to always provide us with a PPE. Are we using it differently than we were a year ago? Absolutely. But we're not using it in a way that is unsafe for us. We have never had to expose ourselves to anything. We've never had to like ration masks. So really, if anything, I feel like we've been more safe and more protected as providers now than we probably were in the flu season that we just came out of. So our organization, while there were certain like the N95 masks and the Papper hoods are still like on pretty short supply. We still have some. We've just changed to just really like isolate if we need to do aerosolizing procedures, making sure only necessary people are in the room, things like that, bubble. And I think while we all had the fear and still have the fear of getting coronavirus, the bigger fear became our jobs. I think any rational person, if you don't have an anxious reaction, I think anxiety is the body's normal defense against something that you don't understand and have no protection from, or like whatever the feeling is. But as we were, and here's the thing, I couldn't even see the rational thought in all of that with my own anxiety. There was a night that we were leaving, it would have been April, and Marina and I and another one of our care techs, we all like walked out together at the end of the night and we're just talking about, you know, guys, it's just been hard, and just probably stood by our cars for 30 minutes and just talked about our anxiety and our fears. And Marina told me that she was now at that point too afraid to go to the grocery store. And so she'd been ordering those like meal kits, pretty much all she was eating. Police were like, she's like 5'3 and 110 pounds. I'm like, she's 100 pounds soaking wet, maybe 90 to 95 pounds because she was losing weight. I was worried about her nutrition. I was worried about nutritional imbalances. There's no way that she was getting, I mean, she probably was getting nutrients. I mean, there's like fruits and vegetables and grains, but like as far as protein and like having that balance that makes you, that supports good brain function, that supports good decision making, that supports that higher level of thinking, I question how deficient she was. And I'm not a physician. I can't make that judgment. I don't have that. But I do question like where she was at, because you get anxiety anyway. And even with like a balanced diet and taking care of all the stuff your brain needs, it can be a challenge. But you start throwing in that nutritional imbalance and it can go awry really quickly.
When we spoke with Marina's childhood friend, Sarah, she told us that she observed a difference in Marina during their conversations after the spread of the coronavirus began.
It mostly was centered around COVID. I noticed it around March when everybody got anxious about COVID. But I think it was just when she would text me, and because she was very kind of in tune with her feelings, a social worker, had that kind of rooting in psychology. She wasn't someone that like hid how she was feeling or how she was doing, and you'd be surprised. She was very open with me for the entire time we've known each other on. So when she was feeling down, when she was happy, how she was doing, always checking in with me as well. So she was very forthcoming and honest about that. And then the end of March, she started to reach out over text. We were talking, and it's in particular saying how nervous she was that she didn't feel like there was enough PPE at different points in time, and that people were nervous. People were coming in to be tested at COVID, and she had to be there, but she didn't feel completely secure that she was okay. But she called out to me how she felt like the people that she worked with, the nurses and the doctors and her boss and everyone at the hospital, making a really concerted effort to keep the social workers who didn't have to be kind of at the front lines protected and safe. And so she said she felt really safe by her coworkers and the people she worked with. But I think she was just understandably nervous being in proximity of it. And so that was kind of a big focal point. It kind of shifted from our text being just kind of about, you know, day-to-day stuff in our lives and the mundane to being a bit more nervous about that. And I had commented to my husband like, oh, wow, okay, I think Marina, of all my friends, this is really affecting her. But I get it. She's in the hospital, whereas most of my friends aren't in the medical realm. And so it's going to affect them less. So I would just kind of send her silly things throughout the day to distract her and let her know I was thinking of her. And then she seemed a little less nervous once the place she was working kind of for temporarily ran out of COVID tests. And that seemed to calm down some. And then there was some talk of her needing to go to the emergency room to like work, or the emergency department, I guess they call it now. So the ED, and then how she was a little nervous about how that was going to net out. And that last time I spoke with her was, I want to say, May 13th and 15th. So mid-May, which I'm not sure why I didn't message her until then, but that's another thing I'll just have to work through in my head. But she had sounded a lot more like, okay, you know, I'm nervous, but things are working out. You know, there are some furloughs in the hospital, but luckily my job hasn't, you know, been furloughed yet. And so she sounded like she was still very nervous, but it was getting to a good place. So it didn't feel to me like, it wasn't like ramping up in frantic, But who knows? I don't know what she was going through that last week. But it felt to me like it was still very anxious about all uncertainty and the unknown, but not peaking. It seemed more like it was coming down.
As COVID-19 continued to spread across the nation and world, the strain of the health crisis seemed to really be taking its toll on Marina. And her coworkers were concerned about her, but they weren't sure exactly how they could help her. Rachel told us about the last time she and Marina worked together.
Those self-care things were being limited by COVID. And I noticed the last patient that I had with her was on, I believe it was like Monday, May, probably 18th. And that was the last patient I had with her. And I remember being super frustrated with her because I felt like she couldn't hear me. And I had concerns about the patient. And I just felt like we weren't getting on the same page. And I was like, man, she's so distracted. Like, she's not hearing me. And ultimately, the patient was handled 100%. Like, everything was covered. I remember thinking, like, man, like, I think her anxiety is up. And I just meant to check in with her, by the end of that day. She also, with the masks, we have two different masks. We have obviously pediatric masks and adult masks, all hospital grade, but she insisted on wearing the kids mask. But so she would wear this Mickey Mouse kids mask. And even that day she was out and she was complaining about her ears hurting, and ear hurt is a real thing with mask wear. And I remember being like, Marina, you don't want to put on like one of those ear savers because it's going to make it tighter. But I feel like we could make it work with the purple mask. And she was like, no, I can't wear the purple mask. It's too big and too much air gets in.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After her last shift on May 22nd, 2020, Marina had several days off of work and was due to return on May 28th. No one knows exactly what Marina did with her time off, since she lived alone and mostly kept to herself. But the day before she was due to return to work, a strange series of events took place that Marina's coworkers and friends learned about more than a week after she failed to report to work on May 28th. This is what Rachel told us.
I believe the last day that she worked the clinic, either the 21st or the 22nd, so it was the end of that week, I wasn't there those days, but she had taken some time off for the Memorial Day weekend. and was supposed to be back on, I believe, Thursday the 28th was her first day back. So we didn't know that she was missing. What happened is she, on the 28th, she was supposed to work at noon, which was earlier than her regular schedule, which is also important because she was not happy about having, she usually worked 5 p.m. to close, which means our doors close at 10 p.m., but we're there until the last patient is there, and she's there too until the last patient is there. So it was usually about 10, more like 11 to midnight. But having to come in at noon again was a huge schedule change, and she was really resistant to it, but it meant that stability for her job, and so she kind of caved. She no-called, no-showed her job, which was incredibly uncharacteristic of her. If anything, like even Marina running 5 minutes late is probably 3 to 5 phone calls, if not texts, just like really overcompensating. We don't have patients in the building when she gets there, so it's running 5 minutes late doesn't really affect things. But anyway, so to no-call, no-show was incredibly uncharacteristic, and her manager reached out. There was also another urgent care social worker who was like running late himself or had forgotten something at home and was going to be late to his clinic. And so he had reached out, was trying to reach out to Marina to get her to cover just like kind of opening of his clinic, and he could not reach her. So nobody could reach her. And so then her manager reached out to her emergency contact, which is her brother, Victor, who lives in, I believe he's in the Austin area in Texas. My understanding is that the police were by her apartment that evening, and she was not home, but there was nothing was done. Victor was trying to push for a missing persons report to be filed. He was told not to file a missing person report. The police said she'll come around. And he was just like, no, she doesn't. Like, this is not how, she would never just do this. And they would not file. There was no missing person report.
While Marina's coworkers were waiting for updates on what had happened, her brother told us about the call he received on May 28th and how he jumped into action to look for his sister.
I got a call from her boss, Kay, and she said, look, Marina is never late, and she's now about an hour and a half late coming into work. Have you heard from her? Is there something going on that you're aware of? And immediately that raised quite a bit of concerns. My sister is not somebody that ever disappeared, ever went without communicating when we reached out to her. So I immediately texted her, didn't hear back from her. Within a few minutes, I texted her back and said, listen, if I don't hear back from you, I am going to have to contact police to find out where you are. So I'm giving you 30 minutes to contact me. I didn't quite wait 30 minutes. Prior to that, I contacted the police to find out what was going on with my sister, if they could go and do a well check in her apartment. My concern is that she may have contracted COVID, may have been passed out on the floor or something like that. Within just about 2 hours, Officer Winter contacted me from Kansas City, from her apartment, and said, look, I knocked on the door. There's nobody answering. I requested that he would go in. So he looked for the apartment manager. The apartment manager allowed him to go in for a wellness check. They went in. They looked for my sister there. She was not there. He kind of pointed out the apartment seemed to be in a little bit of unorganized fashion, which is very contrary to my sister. My sister is very organized. So that raised some flags, red flags for both myself and Officer Winters, where we decided that it was good to open a missing persons report. With that, began to open the missing persons report.
Marina's coworkers, boss, and her brother Victor all knew that something was wrong. But the police weren't interested in taking a report and seemed to think that Marina would come back. What the police didn't tell anyone was that they had arrested Marina on the evening of May 27th, and that they had been the last people to see her when she was released on the morning of the 28th. In fact, when Marina's supervisor called the police again on May 29th to report her concern that something may have happened to Marina, the police told her that Marina had been found.
I know on the 29th, that Friday, you know, she again was not at work. And I think that led her manager, Kay, to call the police again. And Kay was told by the officer that Marina was found and safe. And so she communicated to her staff that Marina was found and safe. And I think everybody just assumed that She was probably getting like an inpatient psych kind of just like treatment, evaluation, stabilizing, just like, oh my gosh, she's getting some self-care. Like there was just like a relief.
But Marina hadn't been found. And for the next week, Marina's coworkers weren't sure where their beloved coworker was, whether she just needed to take a personal break or if something was seriously wrong.
We didn't know any of this was going on. I remember getting the email from Kay, who's Marina's boss, saying there wouldn't be like a social work coverage. And I was like, oh, I wonder if she's sick, or just like had a thought of like, where's Marina for that weekend, but nothing. And it wasn't until the following Wednesday, it was like the 2nd to the 3rd of June, when somebody on Facebook saw a post that Marina's sister-in-law, Lou, had posted to like Missouri missing persons, that one of our nurses at one of the other urgent cares just happened to be a part of that group and saw. And it just was, I mean, it was like the gossip circle, but really just like our social circle of coworkers just exploded of like, where's Marina? Like, where's Marina? And there's all of this back and forth. Nobody knew about what happened on the night of the 27th. And I'll go back to that here in a minute. We just knew, I was like, surely she's inpatient psych. And then it was like the social workers told us that they had been told she was found and safe. So we're like, well, maybe she just really wants privacy.
Marina's coworkers were hoping that she really had been found and that she was safe and maybe just taking some time to herself. Meanwhile, Marina's brother Victor was still pushing the Kansas City police to file a missing persons report.
We waited for roughly a couple hours, and I heard back from Officer Winters telling me, and I don't know if his name is Winters or Winter, but he contacted me and said, look, the missing persons report won't be able to be filed because she was picked up by the police on Wednesday night. So this was on Thursday. And I asked him, hey, what's the issue? What happened? Why was she picked up? And there were a couple conversations around that. The first one was she was involved on a hit and run, and that's why she had been picked up, but that she would contact me by Tuesday or Wednesday. Okay, which didn't make sense, right? Why would she contact me on Tuesday and Wednesday if I'm looking for her today? And that was Thursday, so I would have literally have to wait for almost five days to find out something from my sister. I asked him, why Tuesday or Wednesday? Why Tuesday or Wednesday? And he said, contact the detective on the case. And I did. He gave me his direct number. His name was Burnett. So I called Detective Burnett, and he said, well, what did Officer Winter told you? And I said, he told me that my sister would contact me by Tuesday or Wednesday, but I don't understand why that would be the case. I want to know a little bit more about it. And I also said, hey, she was picked up, for what I understand, by a hit and run. He confirmed and said, yes, again, she should contact you by Tuesday or Wednesday because of privacy. We can't give you any additional information. For Thursday, that was the end of the day. That's as far as I was able to push. They refused to take the missing persons case. They actually closed the one that I had opened with Officer Winter and left it at that. On Friday, I called them again. Okay. And this time around, I spoke with another officer. I don't remember his name, but spoke with an officer, and he said, look, she was picked up for her well-being. And if they're telling you that she'll contact you by Tuesday or Wednesday, then she should be able to contact you by Tuesday or Wednesday. But we cannot open a missing person's case. So at that point, I asked my parents to call. I said, look, I've exhausted everything I could have to open a missing person's case, and they won't do it. Maybe if mom and dad calls, maybe they'll open it. Please call them. So my parents called them. They spoke with Detective Burnett, and Detective Burnett told my parents again, hey, look, she'll contact you by Tuesday or Wednesday. While this was happening, my wife was doing some research in the background to understand what Tuesday and Wednesday had in relationship to anybody being arrested. And what we found out is that in Missouri, there is a 96-hour hold for observation if a person is thought to be in danger, either to others or to herself. So based off of that, we started to make a little bit of sense that maybe Marina was picked up and put under observation for that 96 hours. And because it's business hours, he would have exactly been released on Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on the timing exactly that she was placed under observation. So I called him again, and I asked him to verify this. Can you please tell me, was she put under observation? Can you please verify? Can you at least tell me that? Called a bunch of hospitals. Every hospital I could think of locally, I've called. Psychiatric hospitals, regular hospitals, anything that I could think of, I called, right, to understand if there was a possibility that something like that had happened. Through that process, I kept being told that Tuesday or Wednesday, she'll contact you. I didn't stop calling. I kept calling over the weekend. Tuesday, called them. Hey, it's Tuesday. Haven't heard anything going on. On Wednesday, I finally called and said, look, you guys told me Tuesday or Wednesday. It's Wednesday. My sister hasn't shown up. I need you guys to find where she is, and I need a missing persons case open. This time, the detective that answered the call was Detective Snyder. Detective Snyder said, look, I can't open a case, but I can look into it to see what's going on, and then I'll get back to you. So he did something, a few phone calls or whatever it was, and he called me within 2 hours and said, yes, let's go ahead and open a missing persons case. So we started working on a missing persons case from that date forward.
Marina's friend and coworker Rachel had been off of work for a few days during this time, but returned to work on June 4th, thinking that Marina had been located and was well, since the police had told their supervisor that she was okay.
I went into work on then Thursday the 4th, still thinking that she was found and safe. And I had a 3:30 report time because they'd pushed our hours back. We usually reported at 11:30. I got there a little bit early and like saw my friends and coworkers and was just like, hey, so she's good. And my friend Laura, and I'll never forget this, she's like, Rachel, she's not good. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, we don't know where she is. Nobody knows where she is. And I was just like, Laura, stop. Because we had been talking all morning about she's fine. You know, these people were told she was fine. Like her boss said she was fine. Like, what is going on? And at our huddle that morning, it was that she's not fine. Nobody's heard from her. Sorry, that was like one of the hardest moments. Okay, you go from she's like missing to she's fine to like, no, she's not fine. And that they explained a little bit about what had happened on the night of the 27th, but that she was not found, and that the police, and that is 7 days later, were finally filing a missing persons report, and that she's missing.
As Marina's friends and coworkers started to push harder for information from the police, they began to learn about the bizarre series of events that started on May 27th. Here's Rachel again.
On the night of the 27th, Marina drove about a quarter mile from her apartment, ended up in a woman's front lawn, and got her car stuck. It was not a car accident. She jumped a curb and ended up in a pretty high up on this woman's front lawn. They heard it, being the woman and her husband. They came out and were like, are you okay? And Marina said, apparently twice, that God brought her there. Clearly, like, not in her right mind. And so the lady was like, I'm going to call the police. Let's get you some help. And in that time that the lady called 911, Marina reversed her car and did not crash into a light pole, which is what somebody has reported, but just backed up into like an electrical box where her car could no longer reverse. And she had like a tiny kind of like Toyota Corolla type car, tiny sedan. She left. So her car was there. She left her car, walked down to this wooded area at the top of the street. Police show up. She comes back and she is taken in for a suspected DUI. She tells them that she put her phone and her keys in this wooded area. She tells them that she's drank 2 bottles of wine that night, refuses medical care, refuses an ambulance, tells them to take her to jail. And so they booked her that night and took her to the police station. Her car was impounded.
Marina was released by the police the next morning and was last seen by police department employees walking away on foot without a phone, transportation, money, or identification. This only raised more questions as we researched this case. Like Victor and Rachel, We weren't sure why the police had said that they had to wait 5 days to file a missing persons report when Marina was obviously missing. Why would the police tell Victor that Marina would contact him by the next Tuesday or Wednesday, a week after she had disappeared and refused to take a report? We checked into Missouri's laws on filing missing persons reports on an adult and found the following. Missouri laws have no waiting period, stating, quote, "No law enforcement agency shall prevent an immediate active investigation on the basis of an agency rule which specifies an automatic time limitation for a missing persons investigation." We thought that maybe the police didn't believe Marina qualified as a missing person. However, the Missouri statute defines a missing person as anyone who is missing and is physically or mentally disabled, or is missing under circumstances indicating that the missing person's safety may be in danger, or is missing under involuntary or unknown circumstances. Marina's case would certainly fit these criteria, as she was last seen walking out of the police station after being arrested for driving while impaired, though our research indicates that the police never gave her a breathalyzer test or took her for blood testing. When we talked to Victor, he shared with us what the police told him about Marina's impairment when they found her walking back to her wrecked car on the evening of May 27th.
So my sister in 39 years never got drunk, okay? So that in itself is something bizarre, and I cannot make heads or tails out of it. All her friends, same thing. They said, look, we in high school, we used to go out and party. I mean, in college, we used to go out and party, and Marina never drank. So there's something strange there. Fundamentally, that doesn't make sense. Then you're stating that Marina drank 2 bottles of wine, which in itself, for a person that's 100 pounds that doesn't drink, you pick up the volume of liquid and you try to shove down somebody's throat, 2 bottles. Now, I've heard upwards of 6 bottles. From the Sergeant Caldwell, someone said, you know, Marina said she had 6 bottles. I said, that is physiologically impossible. I know my medical school is about 30 years behind me now. It is physiologically impossible for somebody at 110 pounds, 100 pounds, to drink that much liquid, period. And the alcohol itself would have put her in coma. He immediately recognized that, yeah, that doesn't make sense. That's another question there, right? Could somebody have slipped her something? I don't know. Because Marina didn't do any drugs. She didn't even take natural medication. Nothing. And even when they searched her house, there was no medication. There was no alcohol. There was no drugs. There was nothing. Period. Zilch.
Marina's coworker, Rachel, also said that she finds it nearly impossible for Marina to have consumed 2 bottles of wine that night and doesn't understand why the police were so certain that she was under the influence of alcohol.
I can't imagine that girl putting down 2 bottles of wine, given her mental state and her nutritional status. She said that she drank 2 bottles of wine. Here's the thing. I don't know who said that. I don't know who reports hearing that. I just know that it has been said several times that, and it could have come from the witness, her name's Yoli, that she ended up in her yard. I don't know if Yoli said that. I literally don't remember where that piece of information came from. But I immediately was like, there's no way that she would be conscious after 2 bottles of wine. The police said somewhere that they, and this could have been, again, at the search or something I read, I don't know, but they suspected drugs, alcohol, or a psychotic kind of break affecting her. I do not believe they've yet to tell us that they did a blood alcohol test. I don't believe she blew in a breathalyzer. They certainly did not take her to a hospital to get labs. There was no medical evaluation. There was nothing to confirm why they brought her in. As far as I know, there was none of that, none of that happened. And if they did, they have not given us any. It's been a kind of a hot point that everyone keeps asking them about and have they been questioned about several times by her friends and family. And we have not gotten a straight answer, which leads us to believe that it did not happen.
Childhood friend Sarah agreed with Rachel and Victor that all of what the police were telling them was uncharacteristic of Marina, and something had to be very wrong. Here's Sarah.
Marina's not someone who would run from things, who would be in hiding right now, who would just need to escape it all. Like, none of it aligned with, she kind of understood life. She knew how to process it. She knew the ups and downs. in a healthy way, like everyone does. She plowed through difficult parts in her own life, was open, was strong, worked through it. So it didn't seem to me like, you know, sometimes you hear people just kind of like need to escape it all and run away for a second. And yeah, you'll hear from them in a few weeks to be like, that wasn't the Marina I know, especially during this time when she was so nervous about COVID, to be like, she was very conscious of her own safety, of my safety, of other people's safety. I mean, when I got into grad school, everyone was like, congratulations. And like Marina showed up to my house and like gave me a gift and it was pepper spray. Whenever I would travel anywhere, she would check in on me to be like, make sure you let your parents know where you are. And she didn't do careless things typically. She didn't put herself into those situations. And I would even say, like, oh, are you going to go here? And she was like, well, no, you know, I want to be mindful of my safety. So the idea that she would have just thrown caution to the wind, especially when she was so nervous about COVID, to be like, I don't know why she would be out and about. I don't know why she would be somewhere. But if she sounded incredibly confused and disoriented. And Marina doesn't drink at all. Maybe she's sipped wine a couple times. She's just not a drinker. She doesn't do drugs. So for her to be disoriented, it felt like something bad has happened. Either someone's done something to her or she is suffering and something has like internally caused her to be disoriented and delusional. And when we heard driving while impaired, it didn't make sense, you know, because you immediately jump to alcohol and it's like, well, she doesn't even drink. So that would be a very weird state for her to have been in. And it sounded like, you know, there was no breathalyzer, there was no tox screen, but that later on when Victor had talked to the cops, they said that Marina had admitted to drinking, which also doesn't make any sense, but that her admission was something like she'd had 2 to 6 bottles of wine, which doesn't make any sense. We started to piece together a lot more what happened, and Yoli, the woman whose yard she ended up in, I'm so grateful that she was there and she was paying attention. She has said, listen, you know, it didn't seem like she was drunk. I've seen drunk people before. That didn't seem drunk. She said to me twice that God sent her there. She seemed very, very out of it and disoriented, but not in a drunk way. So something was wrong. And I can understand the, like, how it could eventually turn into a driving while impaired, but the alcohol part doesn't sit well with me at all, to be like, that's just not her. And people who don't drink don't turn to alcohol in times of need. I mean, I've seen reports saying she was 110 pounds. She had to have been less than that. She was so tiny. To be like, if she never drank, she wouldn't have drank 6 bottles of wine. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But something was wrong. To have said, God sent me twice, to be that disoriented. And that, yeah, Yoli, I'm so glad she was there and paying attention, because it's really wonderful to have her insights and to kind of have that validated, to be like, something was off. She was very disoriented. Seems like she was just lost and trying to find her way home, and she didn't seem drunk. Because that both terrifies me, but also confirms kind of my suspicions, which is she wasn't just out and then drunk driving. To be like, that wasn't her. But it also opens up the door to then, oh my goodness, what happened to her? And definitely a lot of my friends have been like, was she drugged? Was she drugged?
According to a timeline Marina's friends have made documenting the events leading up to her disappearance, Marina wrecked her car at approximately 10 p.m. on May 27th. Because the police won't release any information or video footage of the interaction with Marina, we don't know exactly what transpired between Marina and the Kansas City police that night. But according to Victor, Marina wasn't trying to run from the police or the scene of the accident.
The other thing that bothers me is this, oh, he was a hit and run. He wasn't a hit and run. First, she never hit anything. The cable box that they're saying that she hit, if you look at the Google Maps in 2019, that cable box was already bent. There is no tire mark that would even point to her even touching that cable box. And then running, she didn't run. She parked the car, she got out, and then she walked. What the intent was, I don't know. But immediately, and Yoli will tell you this, immediately when Marina saw the police, she came back. So she wasn't running from anything. She's like, hey, look, I don't know what to do. What do I do next? So she probably was lost, wondering, thinking through, what do I do? As soon as she saw the cops, she came over. Like, maybe they'll help me. Maybe the police will help me. Then she refused to be taken to the hospital. The hospital, I believe, is because she was afraid of COVID, so she refused to go there. So my thought is that she believed the safest place for her to go was jail. There's probably going to be a few people there. I'm probably going to be by myself. There's not going to be a lot of contact with other people where I can potentially be exposed to COVID. Those are thoughts that I have, trying to make sense of it.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. There were other strange aspects of Marina's disappearance, too. For example, the police stated that she made 3 phone calls prior to leaving the police department. They told Victor they aren't able to see who she called that day. Here's Victor again.
She made 3 phone calls from the police station, and the 3 phone calls were probably for somebody to come and help her, come give her a ride, because they released my sister without wallet, without a credit card, without her driver's license, without a car, and without a phone. She literally had the clothing on her back, and that's it. Without anything, they released her, and it's a wooded area. Again, on Thursday morning when she was released, those 3 phone calls that she made, they are unable to find it. The police department's internal IT says, oh yeah, I'm unable to retrieve the data. There's a data gap there. So last Friday, I asked him, I said, okay, you had a data gap. Were you able to reach out to your voice over IP provider, which is Cisco? Because data doesn't vanish. It's stored somewhere. Did you guys reach out to Cisco? And their answer was, oh, no, we didn't. Why not? Do you want to solve this or you don't want to solve this? If you want to solve it, you're going to go after the phone numbers. You're going to call those 3 people and say, hey, did she leave you a message? Right? Did you call her back? Did you pick her up? Did you help her? The answer may be no, but at least 40 days ago, 50 days ago, we would have had a different path versus waiting 60 days now, almost 60 days to say, oh yeah, we never really asked Cisco for the information. Why? Why? She would have to rely on one of those 3 people that she called to give her a ride wherever she went to. That's why those 3 phone calls are key. They're not fantasy. We're not dreaming that these 3 phone numbers will help us with something. They're key. Either those people are going to tell us that, hey, we didn't give her a ride, right? Or yes, we gave her a ride. And this is what we took her to. Now, until we get that, we won't be able to find out anything. And then getting the information from her phone, which is with the FBI lab waiting to be broken into. I don't know all the ways for that, but I assume there's got to, this is the 21st century, right? We have ways to solve problems.
Marina's coworker Rachel also shared what the police told her about the phone calls.
After telling us that they didn't monitor phone calls and proceeded to leave the station on foot about 7:30 in the morning. So she walked, they have her on cameras walking. And even the police sergeant said, this was Saturday the 6th when we were searching for her, said that she was kind of just wandering around the parking lot and they had that on video. And then later revealed that they could see her on video on the street outside the police station, and which is Pleasant Valley Road, until about 8:30. And then she's no longer on film. There's a lady that lives in a house not too far from the police station who did saw Marina walking and called the police to report her. And nothing was done. They didn't make contact with her. And that's literally the last time anybody saw her.
As clues to Marina's mysterious disappearance dried up, Marina's loved ones continued to press the police for answers. Rachel told us what the police found when they obtained a search warrant for Marina's apartment.
So the police, after they filed the report, were able to get the search warrant, and they found a lot of travel documents, like her passport. I know they found her passport in her trunk. And some like sentimental items that you would find like on a desk at work that we later found out were previously on her desk at work. There was no missing items that they could find. There was no alcohol, no drugs, no prescription drugs, no like mind altering substances that they could find in her house. She had had packages delivered. So there were Daily Harvest, for instance, was sitting on her front step with some other packages. The maintenance man had moved them inside the apartment. Her neighbor that lives diagonal from her, so like across the hall in one apartment forward, said that she had taken out her garbage that night and left it by her front door, which was uncharacteristic. She just said, I just noticed her garbage sitting there, and her garbage never sat there. And eventually we just put her garbage in the garbage can because we didn't know, you know, what was going on. But we saw her box because her food was there.
Police also conducted searches of the area near where Marina was last seen and recovered some of her personal property. Rachel told us more.
So they found her cell phone. They did recover. It was on the second search. They were able to recover her keys and her cell phone in the woods. She said she just threw them in the woods. It sounds like they were almost like just delicately like kind of buried and placed. It's like within walking distance. It was all within less than like a half block, if even a quarter of a block. So not far from where her car was impounded from and where her car was from. But they were able to recover the cell phone. I know that the cell phone right now is still in an FBI lab. The Kansas City police were not able to get access to it. She had a MacBook that was also recovered. I know they've been running her financials. I know that there was like some delay in getting that. There was delay in getting all of it. One, because there was no crime that they could prove that happened. And two, they were a week. We were searching for her 9 to 10 days after she was last seen. So, I mean, we already started looking for her late. That's been the delay. And then now you talk about COVID and labs and, you know, they're backlogged because FBI was down to like one person in the lab at a time.
No one was quite sure what to make of these findings, but Rachel and some of Marina's other friends were later allowed into Marina's apartment, where they found some notes that Marina appeared to have written in an altered mental state. We aren't going to share the content of those notes, but Marina appeared to have plans for the future in what she wrote and didn't indicate any thoughts of self-harm or desire to walk away from her life. The days and weeks continued to pass as everyone continued their search efforts for Marina. When on July 5th, an alarming discovery was made by a young boy in the Shoal Creek bed, not far from where Marina was last seen.
So they found remains. So we don't know. It was like a pelvis and below, some denim jeans found by like a 10-year-old boy in the creek bed, really like with 200 to 300 yards from the police station. But they haven't been able to identify male or female. So it was found in Shoal Creek. And I have a literal image of where they were searching and where it was found. And you can see that in relation to the police department. So It's like 200 to 300 yards northwest of the police station.
Marina's brother Victor expressed frustration that the police haven't seemed to prioritize the identification of these remains.
You know, if these are her remains, we would have found perhaps intact, perhaps could have been identified, and we wouldn't be having to go through this. They did not do a search until I arrived to Kansas City, and the search was originally put together by her coworkers from the hospital. Only once they had put the search together did the police jump in, backed it up, and provided some resources on Saturday, June the 6th. So from the 28th until the 6th, nothing was done. Absolutely nothing. There is a chance that they would have found my sister. Maybe not alive, but maybe we would have been able to recognize the body instead of having to go 40 days only to find out that the remains are there. And now we have to go through a DNA test, which could take upwards of 9 months.
While Marina's family and friends wait to find out who the remains belong to, they continue to search for her and any clues as to what may have happened to Marina on the morning of May 28th. We reached out to the Kansas City Police Department, hoping that we could interview the investigating officers and learn a little more about their search for Marina. Instead, we received the following email from a supervisor at the police department. "I can say that there is no indication of foul play at this time. I appreciate that you reached out, but I do not believe it would be a very compelling interview for your audience in this particular instance." We disagreed with this, as the police were the last people to see Marina. But when we continued to press for an interview, we got this response: "I think it would be a pretty boring interview for your audience. The reality is we have no reason to believe a criminal act occurred. As a result, there would be no persons of interest, no persons with new information, and nothing the general public could provide that would assist with the investigation." That was the last communication we had with the police department. And despite their lack of interest in public assistance, we always hold out hope that someone who listens to the show will recognize or remember something they saw and heard and report that information to the police. For Marina's friend Sarah, she's left to wonder if Marina had a mental break and the police blew her off as a drunk, releasing her the following morning when she was in desperate need of care.
I think every week I think something different. Part of me wonders if she was having some kind of medical emergency. It was misconstrued as a drunk girl. They sent her off. And I mean, I don't know how, if you were near home and you were taking 5 miles away from home and you don't have a phone or money or keys or an ID, I mean, you could drop me 5 miles away from home with that set of circumstances and completely with it in the middle of the day, and I'd have trouble getting back. I don't know how you do that. So I just keep coming to, if she had a medical emergency and then was released like that, did she just wander somewhere and get in an accident or die because she was trying to get home and didn't have any resources to do that? So much revolves around, I think, those three phone calls. If they happen and she spoke with someone, then somebody came and got her and is hiding her. And that's a completely different case and a just as, you know, 50-50. Like, if the phone calls happened, then somebody, three people she spoke with, somebody knows where she is and has her and just isn't coming forward, which is weird. And if the phone calls didn't happen and there was just kind of a mix up in the system of, oh, okay, God, wait, we're processing a lot of people that night. I thought she was the one who spoke to someone, but maybe she wasn't. Who knows? I don't think it's the police. You know, you want to believe it's the police's job to take care of you, but I don't believe, from what I've read online, it was actually like part of their policy to do so. So maybe they just got it confused and then she didn't speak to someone. Then I think we need to be doing a ton more ground searches in the area looking for her, because I've been told the odds of like someone just random coming who didn't know anything about it picking her up are really low. So either she's with someone, and then the fact that that person wouldn't be coming forward to even let us know she was okay is really scary, or she didn't get a hold of anyone and we just need to do a lot more ground searches because we just have to figure out where she wandered to before eventually she just couldn't get home and was in trouble.
So what happened to Marina Bischoff after her single car accident on the evening of May 27th, 2020? Why were the police so certain that she was drunk without testing her? Especially considering the neighbor whose yard the accident occurred on said that Marina didn't appear to be intoxicated. Was she suffering some kind of medical event that left her in an altered state? Could she have consumed something that she was unaware would affect her in this way? Or even, could she have been drugged? And why are the police so seemingly uninterested in finding Marina? I have to say that our communications with the police department were strange. Does the police department have something to hide in this case? Was there some negligence on their part? Why are investigators dragging their feet on unlocking her electronic devices and looking at her financial records? Are they actively working on this case and keeping the information they have to themselves? Or are they putting the case on the back burner, hoping that Marina will turn up and the case will be closed? We are left with many questions at the end of this story. An identification of the remains found in the creek bed remains pending at an unknown laboratory. We do know that the Brazilian consulate in Chicago has taken interest in Marina's case and has actively petitioned the Kansas City Police Department for answers. If you have any information about Marina's disappearance, please contact your local law enforcement agency or the Kansas City Police Department Missing Persons Unit at 816-234-5136 or report a tip to the TIPS hotline at 816-474-8477. You can follow developments in Marina's story on Facebook at Bring Marina Home.
It's a missing person case. There's no evidence of foul play right now. There's nothing that says a crime happened other than her maybe driving under the influence. But as far as like somebody taking her, like there's nothing. It's so strange. And it could be as innocent as what's the weather that week. I remember that Thursday because my basement flooded. We got like 6 to 7 inches of rain that day, and it had been raining all week, so the ground had nothing left to absorb. She went missing in an area that's like notorious for flash flooding. It has a creek, stormwater runoff. It is known to swell. It's not like one of those, like there's a drowning every time like it rains, but it could be as simple as the creek got her. She fell in the creek and that was the end. And that's a horrible way for it to be just like, that's it for her.
If they're really interested in solving the case, at the end of the day, did she get a ride or did somebody pick her up? And is this somebody related to somebody high up? It doesn't add up, any of it. I wasn't born yesterday. I know that a lot of the steps that they're taking are taking a lot longer. I called the bank myself. The bank said, yeah, 2 weeks I can have the records back to you. Obviously, not to me, but to the police. Police is telling me that they don't have it. So the work that I've done tells me that if I had any way myself to push, I would have had this data a long time ago. The police with the, you know, all the warrants and all of this information should have had this information a long time ago. Why don't they have it?
That brings us to the end of episode 241. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Florida. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.